Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. My name is Michelle Zeman. I am your host. Be sure to take a listen out for our two free code words so that way you can earn your free CEUs. So I'm actually really excited about this guest in particular. This is somebody that I've known actually for a few years now, actually quite a few years. And so I'm really excited to introduce you to Charlotte Earnhardt. She is the owner of a babysitting business called Safe Sensory Sitters. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you, Michelle. I'm so happy to be here. Mm-hmm. So exciting for me. And I hope to get some information about my company out there and also talk a little bit about the ethics code.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So fun fact for those of you who don't know, I have known Charlotte for a few years because I actually at one point supervised her so that way she could become a BCBA. And she's been a BCBA how long now? Like 3 years or 4 years?
Coming up on 4 years. Yeah.
Oh my God. Time flies by. Time flies by.
First ever supervisor.
That is so insane. Oh my goodness. Well, it is amazing to see how far you've come in the last, I mean, I met you back in 2018, 2019. And, you know, so it's like, it's crazy to see how far really both of us have come since then.
It's been a journey for sure.
It definitely has been. So before diving into the business, let's talk about how you got into the field, how you got into, you know, behavior analysis. So tell us how you got here.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people get into the field because they have a family member with autism or they're somehow have some relation to autism. I actually did not. I was in the education program in my high school. Shout out Mr. Fraley. He actually was the first person who ever said anything about ABA to me. And I told him I loved working with children and adults with special needs. And he told me to try to go to the ABA route. At the time, I was like, oh, I have no idea what that is. I don't know what that is. But I ended up doing a social skills camp and did a little internship with PALS. And when I did the social skills camp, I worked with people who were BCABAs, BCBAs, and RBTs. And they kind of told me more about the field and how to become an RBT. So I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. I can't believe you get paid to do this. Like, this is like a dream job for me. I remember seeing one of the BCBAs de-escalate one of the children at the social skills camp so effectively, so amazingly. I was like, I want to be able to do that. That is the coolest thing I've ever seen anyone do. So then I took the 40-hour course, and at the end of my internship, the company told me if I wanted to work there as an RBT that I could, and that's kind of how I fell into it.
That is so awesome. And now you've been a BCBA for coming up on 4 years. My goodness, quite a journey. And now you have a business, Sensory Safe Sitters. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your BCBA journey and how you got started with your business.
Yeah, so coming up August will be 4 years for me. I've actually been a clinical director for most of my BCBA time, which is a little interesting. It's been a little different than kind of what I like studied for and expected for my path. But I did start the business because a lot of my clients, ever since I was an RBT, asked if I could babysit. And of course, knowing our ethics code, I had to decline. Right. But ever since, 2018, I've been getting babysitting requests for these children who are on the spectrum, who are receiving ABA services, who I love, and I would love to babysit them. And it would be great for them. It'd be great for me. It'd be great for the family. But we do have, you know, those ethical boundaries we have to abide by. And I know why they're there. I respect them fully. But it's hard to tell the families, like, hey, I can't babysit. And they're like, well, do you know anyone who can? And I'm like, actually, no. The only people I know are also in this company. Because I did my RBT time in Orlando and my analyst and training time up there. And then I became a BCBA here, and I've been with the same company. So I don't know a bunch of people at other companies. So I was hoping by creating this babysitting company that I'd be able to kind of collaborate with other ABA companies who might have the same need of having a referral babysitting resource, because the families need the support and the care outside of business hours. And I think it's really important to use the skills that I have and more than just the work hours of the week if there's a need. Doesn't hurt. I'd love to do it. And I think it could have a really positive impact.
Absolutely. You know, you'd be so surprised to how many, like, to hear how many people get asked about babysitting, or even like au pair, au pair requests, you know, being able to travel places, but we can't because we have this code to abide by. We are obligated to, you know, keep relationships on that more professional level. And, you know, if we go outside of that, then we could ultimately end up getting into that dual relationship. And that's where the lines start to blur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's really hard sometimes for the clients that we serve in ABA to find babysitters, because there is that extra layer of sometimes challenging behavior or, you know, unique needs. And not your everyday average Joe babysitter is able to safely respond and have the parents have peace of mind. Like, you know, this person is trained in behavior. They know how to respond to these things that might arise while I'm out of the house. And I think that there's a lot of research. I've got Jimmy over here next to me running. There's a lot of research behind caregiver mental health rates and caregivers to children with special needs, I think, have higher rates of depression and anxiety based on the research that I've seen. I don't have the article to cite, but I could probably find it. And I think it's their lives are really hard. I think they go to work, you know, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, whatever their schedule is. And then they come home from work and they take care of their child, and it's harder for them to take time for themselves, which ultimately everyone needs to be able to effectively care for others. So I think that's also something I'm trying to pinpoint with the babysitting company.
Absolutely. I definitely can attest to caregiver mental health being, you know, almost at, I don't want to say like at risk per se, but it's definitely, you know, in a much more sensitive area because of the fact that they've got their own lives, and then they also have this added layer of, you know, just having a child with special needs or a child that has behaviors. And, you know, that gets really hard. I can only imagine what that must feel like for a parent.
Mm-hmm. Could be definitely, I would imagine, tiring at times, and that they might just need a time for themselves and want to take it knowing that their kid's going to be safe and respected and advocated for and all those things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so given that ABA professionals have to avoid multiple relationships within our, of course, that's within our code, how do you navigate those boundaries when providing care outside of that clinical setting?
That's a great question. I think one of the main things to avoid that is kind of a slippery slope is personal social media, making sure that, you know, I make sure that I'm not allowing parents to follow my personal social media account, and obviously not following them back. And then also avoiding, you know, invites to go get drinks or go hang out outside of, you know, the services that we're providing, having to decline those. And of course, explain the implications of a dual relationship and bring everything back to the code and just kind of let them know, you know, it's not that I don't want to and I'd love to, but we do have to abide by this code and make sure that we're keeping it professional and just delivering the services that we're saying that we're going to deliver.
Absolutely. Have you ever felt any like pressure from any family to sort of like go into that slippery slope before?
I don't think that I felt pressure, like family pressuring me per se. I think you do, you know, get close with the families when you're in the home so much and you get to know them and you're like, you both kind of can identify, like, we would potentially be friends outside of this, you know, transaction that we have going on. So sometimes it's harder because you have, you know, understood that, like, you enjoy this person's company maybe, or like you get along, or you have a lot of similar interests possibly, where it could be like, you know, it would be really fun, but, you know, unfortunately we do have to decline and abide by those codes. I actually think it's helpful to have the code, because then we can defer over to it and be like, you know, it's not me, but I do have to abide by this code, and it's very objective. So I do actually really appreciate having the code.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, and it's definitely a very good source. You know, it's definitely a guiding light for us and how we can behave ethically while also still having, you know, having your business. I can definitely imagine, you know, it's definitely a very helpful tool for you just in case anything were to come about, anything were to happen.
Absolutely. And the company I work for actually has an ethics committee. So if any questions that I have, I've emailed them with questions about certain things that maybe felt a little gray to me, so that I could make sure to act ethically. And some of those questions were like, if I have a previous client's caregiver's phone number memorized, can I contact them to offer babysitting services? That was one where I was like, I know I wasn't supposed to be using Central Reach to get their information because that could be a HIPAA violation. But if it's in my head, you know, that was one that was like, So that was what I emailed our ethics committee about, and they said no, that would be an inappropriate use of, you know, caregiver information. But I was like, you know, just thinking outside the box, trying to figure out the best way I can advertise my services to those who might need it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can definitely understand that. And, you know, especially because, like, you've known these families, you kind of like already knew, you know, what it was like to work with them and what their child's unique needs are like. You know, the fact that you couldn't do that, I mean, it's better safe than sorry, because of the fact that, you know, we have our ethics code. We have to make sure that we follow and abide by it. And also HIPAA too. We have to really be careful there. So it's like, you know, you have to tread very lightly at the end of the day.
Yep, for sure. I try to reach out to the ethics committee before I make any moves that could potentially be some kind of violation between HIPAA or ethics, just to make sure that I'm doing this all the right way the first time around. I'm very new to it, so I'm definitely not an expert, but I'm trying to utilize the resources that I have available to make sure that I go about it as best as possible.
Absolutely. I love that. And kind of speaking of, you know, going outside of your expertise or scope of practice, how do you handle requests from parents that might fall outside of your scope of your personal boundaries?
I haven't had this happen yet, but I'm sure I will. It's happened as a provider, as a BCBA, and luckily, again, we have the code to reference back to, and we can very objectively just say that this does fall outside of my scope of professionalism, my scope of competence, and I don't feel comfortable being the one to best address this situation, but I can help you find and locate some other resources of people who might be better equipped to address the situation with you.
Absolutely. Do you do, like, when you're doing your babysitting services, do you have, like, almost like an intake process that you do with the family, or do you have, like, an interview ahead of time?
That's still very new, so I'm still working everything out. The hope is to have an interview process. Some of the parents do request, like, I come and meet the children before we do a babysitting session. Some of them don't feel like that's necessary. So it kind of differs depending on the preference of the family. Most of the families so far are families that I do know and already know the parents. And some of them are previous kids that I used to babysit. Some of them, not all of them, have autism as well. So it just depends on the family and what they feel most comfortable with. I do have a waiver, just kind of clarifying the services that I do deliver and some liability aspects to try to cover everything on that end. And also to be clear about the fact that I am not delivering ABA services, but I am utilizing ABA strategies as I go throughout the session. But I like to do, you know, a little phone call with them just to introduce myself, talk more about, you know, my experience, get to know their child, what behaviors might arise. It's really helpful for me to know what their preferences are, what videos they like, what toys they really like, if they have any specific triggers, any environmental modifications I should be aware of. So I'd like to get as much information as possible before going into the job, especially if it's a new family, so that I can be put in the best situation to deliver the most informed and safe care as possible.
I love that, you know, especially given that you have this, you have this process that you have to go through. And then also too, you know, you're getting to know this child that, you know, you're meeting or you have met or you haven't necessarily known just yet, but you're getting to know them and you're getting to know a little bit about their lives. You know, it's really important to be able to provide that space, but also to be able to understand what their life and their routine is like at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's really important when you're going into their home, because this is their home. This is their safe space. This is their, you're a stranger coming in, and you want to, like you said, just be really aware of their routines and how they do things, because as we know, you know, routines are important to these children, and we want to make sure that we're, you know, not going in and messing everything up, because that'll definitely set up a poor first session, which we want those first sessions to be all about pairing and making sure that you're building that relationship with the child to set yourself up for success.
Absolutely. You know, one thing that I typically will say to like other supervisors, some of my supervisees that I've supervised in the past and present, is we're a guest in these people's lives, whether they are a client in ABA or whether they're a babysitting client. You know, we're a guest, and at any point we can be kicked out because, you know, if we do something that isn't within their routine necessarily, or is something that goes against their beliefs, you know, they have that right. They should have that autonomy at the end of the day. And, you know, we can't just come in like guns a-blazing, you know, being like, hey, we're going to do all this. Like, no, we can't be doing that.
Yeah, got to follow their lead. And luckily, because I was an RBT and delivered in home services, I got a lot of experience of understanding, you know, their routines and how to best go about that and what questions to ask the caregivers too, because sometimes it's a lot of information for them to tell the babysitter, like, okay, at this time we're going to do this, and at this time they like to do this, and to try to ask as many open-ended questions about, you know, what are their preferences. And there's things that I've had experience coming in contact with that they might not know necessarily ahead of time to relay, you know, this information. So I was able to kind of identify a list of questions to ask the caregivers too before coming in the home to make sure that we are being a good guest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It kind of goes down to, you know, asking those questions, and then at the end of the day to upholding client dignity, right? And I feel like that really goes into being able to provide and respect client dignity while you're providing that specialized care, you know, going in and really getting to know your clients, getting to know what their routines are like. You know, I feel like without that, how are we going to be successful, you know?
Yeah, maintaining client dignity is something that I really preach, you know, at the center and try to practice within the company. And for me, number one is offering them choices. I have just seen that have such a positive response from the clients, is if they have a choice, especially if it's something they don't necessarily want to do, but we maybe have to do, like, do you want to take a bath first, or do you want to brush your teeth first? Or, you know, giving them some, as much voice and autonomy with what they're doing, especially in their home, I think is so important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like without autonomy, we're basically just forcing. And, you know, we have to be really, really careful with that, because would you like your choices to be taken away too? Like, you know, imagine if you were in their shoes. Would you like it if someone said, okay, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this, but you don't have a say?
Right. I think ABA services in the home can be so hard for that reason. I know we're talking about, you know, babysitting, but I was having a conversation at work with an RBT the other day who we don't deliver in-home services actually, with my center currently, just in center, but we want to teach them about in-home because they might go to in-home. And there's so many things to consider. And, you know, you usually go into an in-center session with a schedule and we're going to do, you know, this, this, and that. We have to run these programs. But it is such a different ballgame when you're in the home because you really want to respect the fact that this is their safe place. They've already been to school usually throughout the day and they've already done a lot of work. You don't want to come in there, just like you said, firing off demands, because that is just not going to go over well. I would not like that if someone came into my home and was like, hey, guess what? You're going to do this, 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 and this. Absolutely.
Yeah, no way, no way. So kind of going back to the babysitting. So as a business owner of, you know, sensory safe service, let me rephrase that question. All right. So as the owner of Sensory Safe Sitters and having your background in ABA, being a clinical director, how do you balance those dual roles of both of those things while still adhering to the code of ethics?
Yes. As you can tell from last conversation, it's sometimes very hard for me to differentiate just my thought process between the two because so much it's very similar. But I do, I try to be very clear about the services that we do deliver and that we are not delivering ABA services while we're babysitting and that they should not expect to see behavioral progress. This is not, you know, like on the side services they're getting, but just trying to be very clear. I do have a disclaimer on my website saying, you know, we might use ABA principles, but we are not delivering ABA services. Just to be very clear about the differences between the two from the very beginning of the process of a new client coming in or a new child.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I think that's really an important disclaimer to put out there, especially like, you know, you have this background and even though as ABA providers, we want to look at like progress and data, it's like, we're not doing that in the scope of babysitting.
Yeah, it's actually kind of nice because so much of my week is ABA and behavioral progress and data analysis and making decisions and modifications. And babysitting is kind of like a more relaxing environment for me because it's not, okay, I need to make sure I'm following this behavior plan. What's the operational definition of this behavior? And did I need to take data on this? And, you know, like mentally taking data, but just trying to make sure that it's advertised clearly that it is not ABA services. And I like having the luxury of getting to hang out with the kids and it not be like, oh, let me make sure I'm running 10 programs per hour and let me make sure this. It's just like we're hanging out and it's your house and it's your place and we're following your lead and we get to do whatever you want, really, as long as we get what the parents want to get done. And it's really enjoyable for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's about that. It's about making sure that everyone is comfortable. Everyone's routine is done. You know, we're not bound to this, like, we're not bound to taking data. We're not bound to an electronic medical record where we have to just click buttons with, you know, and let me just say, like, as a behavior analyst, of course, I love data, whether that is progress on skill acquisition or on behavior reduction or what may have you. But at the same time, in this kind of environment, it's not necessary. And it's okay to relax a little bit, you know?
We're so programmed to do that. Like, I'm so used to running around with a computer. And it is so nice to actually just not have to worry about, where's my computer at this moment? And, oh, let me make sure I put this data in. And we're just hanging out and getting to know each other and following their lead, really, throughout the session or the afternoon, whatever it is, the whole day. Sometimes the hours vary. And I think it's really relaxing to kind of take a step back from all of the data collection and analysis and thinking about modifications to make for treatment plans and behavior reduction, et cetera.
Absolutely, absolutely. I can definitely imagine that, especially, you've already spent so much of your week so focused, so like hyper focused on all of your program analysis and your treatment plans and, reviewing things. And it's like, okay, let's take a step back from my job, my career as a clinical director, and now I can focus on this really fun activity. It's like, you have this like fun activity outside of work in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Because I love it. I love hanging out with the kids. I love children and adults with autism. I think that they're just such an amazing population and have taught me so much and have given me such a purpose. And I think they're just the funniest, most fun, cool people in the world to hang out with. So if I get to hang out with them outside of work, it's a pleasure for me. Like, I genuinely love it and love to know them. And I think their special interests are so fascinating. And it's truly so enjoyable to me to get to know them and just actually get to know them, play and hang out. I love to play. Like, I'm a big playground gal. I love to do red light, green light, duck, duck, goose, all the different structured games and teaching them how to play and watching them kind of learn and figure out how to play with friends and do that. I love that part. Okay, so getting to do that and also not worry about data is such a It's a blessing for me. I love it.
That's awesome. That is so awesome to hear. Well, I'm going to go ahead and throw in our first code word of the podcast. And the first code word is Jimmy. That is Jimmy. That is Jimmy. All right. So going back to marketing, because you touched briefly on this, of course, making sure that you're marketing your business and representing your qualifications is extremely important, especially when you're advertising. That being said, kind of looking at our code, 5.02 and 5.03 looks at this area. How do you ensure that your marketing accurately represents your qualifications and services without misrepresentation?
Yeah, I'm hoping so far that I've been able to advertise my credentials and the value and the benefit of being a BCBA and providing babysitting services without any confusion of what's being delivered. Like I said, I do have the disclaimer on the website. And of course, if anyone asks any clarifying questions, I would make sure to reiterate that I am a BCBA. I do work in ABA, but I will not be delivering ABA services. So I just try to be really clear with the disclaimer in conversations. But I do advertise that I am a BCBA and an ABA professional. I think that especially caregivers of children who are receiving ABA services would understand the benefit of the training and the credentialing, especially if they've asked their BCBA or RBT if they could babysit and they've said no, and they're like, oh, well, here's another one. Maybe, they're similar. So that's kind of how I go about it currently, but I'm definitely open and will be learning throughout my journey as I've just started, especially if I get comments saying that they were confused. But right now, everyone seems to be pretty clear on it. So hoping to continue on that path.
That's really awesome. And I was going to say too, I mean, the fact that people are very clear so far is definitely a good thing, and it's always very important to make sure that you make yourself prepared with that arsenal of questions, because I know that some families will come in and be like, okay, so what's this and what's that and what's this and what's the other thing, And so it's really good to hear that you haven't had that yet, but definitely that preparation, I can definitely imagine.
I can see it coming, especially if they are getting ABA services and they're aware of the terminology and the behavior plans and they've, been going to their parent trainings and they know kind of what should be being delivered in this environment. And I'm sure I'm going to run into situations where parents might have questions of like, well, how are you responding to this behavior? And it looks like the behavior plan is different than what, is going on here. And so I'm sure there's going to be situations where I'm going to run into more questions about specifics and how, things are being done, which in case I'd, be happy to collaborate with the ABA providers and stuff like that.
I was just going to say too, especially when you have some of your clients who actually do receive ABA services from another company. How do you navigate coordinating care? How have you been able to do that? Or if you haven't quite yet, how do you anticipate that you'll be able to coordinate care with your clients?
Yeah, I haven't quite yet. I do expect to be doing that. I love, as a BCBA, collaborating care. I'm like, try to get in touch with every single one of my kids' teachers, their SLPs, their OTs. I really see the value and importance of collaborating care and think it can be so incredibly beneficial for everyone to be consistent on the same page. I, especially as a BCBA and having clients who have caretakers, have like wanted to coordinate care with them and actually have met with babysitters and Medicare professionals who do offer, what's it called? Is it Medicare? There's a Medicaid service that you can get, RespiCare. That's it.
RespiCare, yeah.
RespiCare. I've actually coordinated with RespiCare caregivers because they do spend so much time with the child, and I want everyone to be doing the right things to set them up for success. So as a caretaker, as a babysitter, I will ask the parents if I do feel like it would be really beneficial. Like, do you feel comfortable with me and the ABA company coordinating care? I'd love to connect with the BCBA. So I would just make sure to get that informed consent. I'm sure the company would probably have a Cognito form or whatever it is, just to get that conversation going and make sure we have all of the signed consents in place before actually coordinating care. But just starting that conversation with the caregivers and seeing if they're comfortable with it, if they want me to, and if there's a need, and if there is, and I think it'd be beneficial for the child, then I would love to get that process going.
Absolutely. Especially, you know, knowing that like the child might be in ABA services, and let's say there's like a specific plan of care that they have to, abide by, for lack of a better term. But, you know, let's say there's like a behavior plan for a specific behavior. It's really important that everybody remains very consistent, you know, especially like if you have a caregiver who might not feel sure about something, and they might ask you, you know, the question that's on my head is, hey, have you talked to your BCBA at your company yet? You know, I'd love to hear what they have to say and see if you can request a copy of the behavior plan. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Because there's definitely behaviors where I'm sure the BCBA and the parents have a specific plan in place. You know, if they're mouthing, redirect to the Chewy or whatever it is. So I, of course, want to be in the know about exactly what they're wanting to do, because it can be really confusing for the child as well if I'm coming in and doing one thing and they're used to another. So I think it's really important, and I hope and plan to be able to coordinate care with the ABA providers as much as possible.
Absolutely. I love that. And, you know, I know that that might be a challenge as you start and, you know, continue your business. But that being said, what has been the most challenging aspect of starting Sensory Safe Sitter so far, and how have you managed to overcome it?
The biggest challenge so far, I think, has been getting the information about my services to other ABA companies, just mainly because of how busy my schedule is, that I haven't been able to just go have a whole day going to all different ABA centers and introducing myself and what I offer. So just getting my services advertised to the populations that might need it the most has been the biggest challenge. I've done some Instagram marketing. My cards are around. I handed out a lot of cards at the Autism Speaks Walk in West Palm Beach. So just trying to connect with the right population that would benefit the most from this service. Some of the parents of like neurotypical children, I've reached a lot of them because I've advertised through my personal Instagram and just like reposted my business page posts. So I've reached a lot of them, and they're not necessarily the population that I'm trying to reach. I'm happy to provide services for them, but my rates might be a little bit higher for them than they might necessarily feel is necessary. I have had some parents reach out for babysitting for their neurotypical children and ask about the. They're like, well, you know, my babysitter only is, you know, $15 an hour. And I'm like, and that's amazing. And then you should stick with that because that's a really great rate. But that is, given my education and my certification and the very limited time that I have available to be offering it out, I will have a little bit higher of a rate, but I do want to make it affordable and I'm flexible. So just really the biggest challenge has been getting my services advertised to the populations that need it. And then also kind of myself being so new to owning a business, figuring out the prices and what necessarily is the perfect rate to offer and how to go about that. It's just going to be a journey for me, but I'm excited to learn about, learn as I go and see what works the best.
Absolutely. You know, don't settle for less than what you're worth, right? Because you worked very hard to get the background that you got. And, you know, it's not like you are just, you know, some, and I don't mean to like sound offensive here, but it's not like you're some high school student who's just starting out. You know, you have a lot of experience with what you do, both within babysitting and within the scope of ABA. So it's, you know, it doesn't come in vain, right?
Right. And I do try to explain that a little bit, you know, that I do have, you know, a master's degree in applied behavior analysis, and I've been working in the field of ABA for about 8 years. And I do work a full-time job as a clinical director. I only have, you know, a couple nights a week, really, where I'm not working, and I am offering those up, and so they do come at a little bit higher of a price than maybe, you know, yeah, your average high school babysitter. I was a high school babysitter, and I did charge literally nothing, because that's, you know, where you're at in life, but that's kind of been the biggest challenge, but I'm enjoying working through it and learning as I go what's going to be the best kind of price range and the best advertising models, but yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What do you see yourself in terms of like your plans for growth? So right now you're in Palm Beach County. So yep. Where do you feel like it could go, you know, say in a year or a couple years?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how far it goes. I probably correlates directly with how hard I market and how much time I put into it. I could probably grow it as fast as I want. I'm not in necessarily a huge hurry to grow it super quickly. I really want to focus on quality at first. My plan is to do all of the babysitting jobs myself until I have so many that I cannot fulfill all of them, and then hire very gradually one at a time, because it's very important that I build the brand and the trust with the families at first, and I know. And I can solidify all the systems, you know, getting the waiver signed, the interview, you know, process, and kind of get a consistent routine of intake and how to keep track of everything and payments and everything kind of figured out first. And then I will plan to hire gradually. Palm Beach County is pretty massive, so I don't know how long it will take to expand past it. I would love to one day. I think it's a very valuable service for a lot of children and young adults on the spectrum and their families. So I'm, you know, just kind of seeing where it goes. I'd love for it to go kind of nationwide one day, but right now just focusing on Palm Beach County and building the brand, building the trust, getting my company name out there, and we'll slowly focus on growing while maintaining quality and having a pretty harsh vetting process, as it does take a lot of trust for the caregivers to let someone into their home. So I want to make sure if it's someone I don't know, but I do probably plan to hire people that I know from like previous RBTs or whoever comes to me, we'll see.
I love that. I love that so much, especially like when you're talking about, you know, making sure you hire people, you know, you want to hire people that are, you know, high quality and that really know what your values are and how you are going to uphold them.
Exactly. I think it's going to be really important. There's people I have in mind for potential hires down the road that either previous RBTs that I used to work with, RBTs that used to work for the center that I work at now, just there's so many amazing providers that I've met throughout my journey and who are so passionate about the children and compassionate towards them. So I thankfully feel like I have a lot of people that could come on board just from thinking about past experiences at the last two companies I've worked with. I've met some amazing, amazing people. And I'm hopeful that most companies that is the case. And that I'd have a pretty broad group to pick from.
I love that. I love that so much. And, I can definitely imagine, being able to hire people like that is going to really be rewarding. And especially if you know how, especially if you know their history and stuff, that's really just so, so important. So, kind of thinking about that, like, how do you ensure, or how will you ensure in the future that future hires maintain that same level of ethical standards and care that you personally uphold?
I think them being ABA providers is going to be my number one kind of requirement. I would really like to hire other RBTs, BCBAs, BCABAs, because they are familiar with that ethics code that we all know and love so much. And then just going over all of the ethical obligations and rules with them before they start to make sure that they're clear on anything and making sure they know to come to me with any questions that might arise, like, oh, hey, this caregiver asked if I can go get, happy hour with them. Like, nope, the answer is no. If there's anything that they feel could be potentially an ethics violation, I want to make sure that they know to come to me and that they feel safe and comfortable doing so. So just having that conversation from the very beginning and making sure they're clear on the code. From the get-go, and then if anything does arise, to make sure to make sure that they clarify with me before moving forward with anything that could potentially be a violation.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's important. That's so, so valid. And, especially like on the realm of feedback, because feedback is extremely important to all of us. Kind of going into that direction, what kind of feedback have you received from parents or caregivers so far within your services?
Yeah, I've gotten mostly positive feedback so far, which has been rewarding. Everyone seems to think that the service will be like beneficial and valuable. I haven't gotten really any negative feedback. The most critical feedback that I've gotten has been from, like I said, caregivers of children who don't necessarily have a diagnosis, just being like, well, I'm not gonna pay that much money for babysitting services. And I'm like, and that is okay. And that's really been the most feedback I've gotten is really with the prices and just I know that my rate will not be perfect for everyone, but trying to stick to my guns, I get a lot of feedback of varying feedback of what it should be. I have some people telling me it should be way, way higher, and some that it should be lower. So just trying to figure out what the sweet spot is for that. And but primarily I've gotten a lot of positive feedback, which has been rewarding.
That's awesome. That is really, really awesome. I know some people think like, oh, well, I should pay less because, like, for example, I know you've mentioned like some of the past people that have come back to hire you. And it's like, well, maybe it's like a friends and family's discount. And it's like, no, we can't just do that just because I've known you for a little bit. It's like you have to understand, like, you've put so much work and so much love into what you do that you shouldn't go less than that.
Sometimes I will do like, well, if you advertise my services or my company, like if you're in a Facebook moms group for moms of autism and you make a post, saying that you use my services and you really like them, then I will give you maybe a lower rate. You help me out, I help you out type deal. So that's something I've kind of dabbled with. But yeah, just trying to figure out what's going to be kind of the best for everyone. I do want people to be able to utilize the service. I don't want to make it unaffordable. I want people to benefit from it. But I also, it is my time, and I've done a lot to get to this point where I feel confident giving services to these children who have, you know, different behaviors and different needs. So just kind of finding a balance between those aspects.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that is really awesome. And I'm going to go ahead and drop our second code word. And that second code word is Lily. That is Lily. That is Lily. So just a last question that I'm thinking of, what kind of advice would you give to anybody who is an RBT or a BCBA that may want to go into this kind of business or even just become a babysitter in general outside of the scope of ABA?
My advice is definitely to go for it. There is a need out there. I think it's so important to help the families outside of business hours. Like I said, I think keeping their mental health in mind and them being able to get out and take a break is so important. It's important for the kids too. You know, you hear stories about, you know, crazy things that happen, and you just have to think sometimes like what that caregiver was going through and stuff like that. So I think just being keeping the kids at the forefront of the decision is, you know, the kids would benefit from your services if you're an RBT or a BCBA. Obviously, you know about, you know, their diagnosis and you know about their needs and you know about how to respond to things that could arise, and that you could utilize that skill and that gift that you have outside of just your everyday 9 to 5, and you might make a little bit more money, and the kids might enjoy, you know, hanging out with you, and the family might get out. So I think it really does benefit all parties, and I would definitely say to go for it, but make sure that you're abiding by the ethics code as you go about it, and they're not your clients, and just being aware of all of the implications that could arise with the ethics code and HIPAA, of course, as well.
Absolutely. I think that's very sound advice, especially really understanding that there are implications to violating your code and also to just being careful of, like not going quite into like BCBA or RBT mode in the sense of like you have to track this, you have to create a plan, you have to do these things. It's babysitting,
You're just hanging out. You get to take that hat off and just hang out and really follow the child's lead. I know there's sometimes in sessions I get caught up wanting to like just let them lead the session and play because they're having such a great time and they're doing something so functionally. But you're like, oh man, I got to get these programs in. I have to interrupt what's going on right now, even though it's really beautiful, and work on something else that you need to work on, which of course they need to work on that too. But sometimes it's hard when you see that they are, you know, just doing something great with a friend, and you're like, I could let this roll for like an hour, but you want to make sure you're delivering billable services. But as a babysitter, you can just let it roll and hang out and let them really explore their creative and visual skills to no max, which is great.
I love that. I love that. Oh my goodness. Well, Charlotte, I've really enjoyed our conversation today. It is so good to see where you've come in the last few years, and I'm really excited for you to, continue with your role as a clinical director, but then also too to see you go into this entrepreneurial role with Sensory Safe Sitters. That being said, where can our listeners find you?
Thank you, Michelle. That means so much to me. You have been an inspiration to me throughout my entire career, so it means a lot to get to touch base with you and hear your well wishes.
Oh.
Find me. I have a website. It's sensorysafesitters.com. I also have an Instagram page, which is sensorysafesitters, and you can also email me at sensorysafesitters@gmail.com.
I love it. I love it. So, listeners, if you're in the Palm Beach County area and you need a babysitter, hire Charlotte. She used to be one of my RBTs when she was one of my when she was going for her BCBA. She was one of my RBTs, and I can tell you, she's fantastic. So I definitely recommend her.
Thank
So
you. Wow.
Of course, of course. Thank you for coming on to the podcast today. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. I've been your host, Michelle Zeman, and I will see you on the next one. Bye, everyone.